We would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land. We respectfully acknowledge elders past, present, and emerging. Always was, always will be. Hi, and welcome to Wine with Megan Bell. We're here to help you navigate the world of wine. I'm Megan, cruise driver, master of wine, Meg Brotman, and we have a super special guest today. Welcome, Nick Brown from All Saints.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I was excited to have Nick come anyway because I was like, special aged wines, talk a bit about Rutherglen. We haven't spoken about Rutherglen much, but Nick, just tell. Okay, no, Meg, you jump in. What's Nick brought?
I feel like you've pressured them because Mel did say in her brief, I'll talk about Marsan, and I will let Nick tell you. There are so many wines that All Saints make, and what has Nick brought?
Brought with him?
A selection of Marsans.
I'm so happy.
You're spoiled.
I am spoiled.
You are.
This is awesome, but I mean, we're going to get into this, but I mean, quickly before we get into it, my mind doesn't immediately go to Rutherglen when I hear Marsan. So tell me, how does Rutherglen do this Marsan?
I'll slightly forgive you for that, that your mind doesn't automatically go to Rutherglen, but we're traditionally known for our fortifieds.
Yeah, yeah.
But our Marsan was planted in 1959, and it's our flagship white variety. As you know, it does really well in the in warmer weather that we have.
Yeah.
And the beautiful sunshine most of the year. So it's a wine that is really beautiful, fresh and young, but also age as well, which I'll show you as we go through them.
Oh my gosh. Okay. They're sitting here just teasing me. So we need to get through these opening questions really quickly. First, Nick, what have you been drinking?
Oh, a friend of mine up in the King Valley makes a beautiful Barbera from the Del Zotto family.
Nice.
Christian and his brother Michael make beautiful Italian varieties, but yeah, their Barbera is one of my favourites from them.
Cool.
And what vintage was it? A recent vintage? Like, or did it have age on it?
No, it was recent. I think it was 2019.
Okay, because I was thinking, someone asked me the other day, does Barbera age? And I have to say, I don't know. Have you ever had any old
Barberas? I haven't had really old ones. A few Vietis.
Okay. Luca Vietti.
From Italy, obviously. But that we, of those, that wouldn't be older than sort of 8-10 years.
Nice.
So they do age to a certain extent.
Yeah, I think I've only ever had Barbera current consumption. I might look into that.
Oh, you'll have to. Research. We're on the edge of our seats.
Yeah, I bet you don't care.
Okay, Meg, you're hitting us up with your fun fact this week. What you got?
It's not really a fun fact. It's
oh, God, what is it?
There were two things that came into my feed in the same week, and I'll talk about them kind of side by side. In Paraguay, at the Paraguay-Argentinian border just recently, a woman was filmed dumping wine out of her boot and smashing it. So wine in Argentina is much cheaper, and Paraguay puts a bigger tax. So she got to the – she'd obviously done a, you know, drive over to get some cheap booze, and she brought back more than she should have, and the Paraguayans – at the border said, well, show us what you've got. And rather than pay the duty on it, she smashed it. Like, you would just think she's paid all this money for the wine.
How much wine?
She had a car full of it, so boot, like probably not value-wise.
Did she die?
No, she lived. She got to drive through, but she filmed herself doing it, basically abusing the Paraguayan people at the same time, the border control.
Wow.
If you've ever driven through there, I can just imagine this one person holding something, holding up everyone getting through customs because she's bought too much wine. But on top of that, there was in Mexico, Mexico makes wine. I don't know if you know, an area, Guadalupe, is quite famous. And they had to lock themselves into the winery because people were coming in with machine guns, trying to take their water rights off them. Mexico's in a massive drought. So if you have the papers for the water rights, you can take more water. And they're avocado growers, and they wanted the water rights because avocados are earning more money than Guadalupe wine. And so they arrived with machine guns, and they locked themselves in for 24 hours to stop these people coming through. So those that you are having avocado on toast, make sure they're Australian grown and not from Mexico.
Oh, wow.
I know, just all over fruit products. I mean, it's a bit crazy. This woman smashing wine because she won't pay the duty, which at the end of the day helps your government. And someone with machine guns turning up at your door because they want your water papers so they can grow avocado.
Bonkers.
I don't agree with the concept of smashing all the wine.
Nuts.
But also, like, I kind of have a little bit of respect. It's kind of like...
The thing is, she clearly has enough money to drive from Paraguay to Argentina and to buy the wine.
It was on principle.
Yeah.
I see.
I mean, I remember coming into Australia when we were getting married.
Yeah.
And we were getting married in New Zealand. We were living in Chile. So we came to Australia with all this wine from Chile that we wanted at our wedding because it was wine that we'd made in Chile. And in Australia, we just forgot to declare it because back in the day, to get from Chile, you flew from Santiago to Easter Island on a small plane, Easter Island to Tahiti, where you had to clear customs, Tahiti to Auckland, Auckland to Melbourne. So we were a little bit knackered. We didn't say that we had the wine because we put it through, and this, I'm sure he was on like border security show. He was old buff and was such a prick to us. When we got to New Zealand, we paid the duty when we got to Australia. When we got to New Zealand, they just said, oh, it's your wedding, eh, bro? Just go through.
Oh, my God.
It's New Zealand.
Yeah, completely different. So
that's amazing.
I kind of, I do feel for her because I feel like smashing the wine over this little schmuck's head.
But I see.
Okay. Onto the more interesting thing, the wine.
This Marcel's been sitting in front of me for way too long.
And look at the colour.
Before we get to the wine, Nick, do you want to give us like just a quick rundown on you and the winery?
Sure. So rundown on me. I worked away for a few years, realised wine was actually a pretty good thing to get into. Our family had been in it for 140-something years, but... we have a family rule where we need to do 4 or 5 years of somewhere else. It can be in wine, but before we can get a job back at home full time.
I think that's a good...
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
So I milked that for quite a few years.
Were they paying you while you were doing it or you had to stand on your own? Yeah, okay.
Stand on my own 2 feet. So I eventually realised, the wine was pretty cool. So went to university in Adelaide for the 4 years and then moved to All Saints in Rutherglen and have been there since. I've been there for about 15 years. All Saints is a bonkers place. It's... two Scotsmen built the winery.
I've got to say, when?
1860s.
Okay, so I showed Mel because Mel did, I've been there loads because we used to have a farm in New Rowe and we'd always go up to All Saints and but I had forgotten how big it was on the landscape. Like when you're there, it doesn't seem to be such... So imposing, but when you see the photos of it,
It's crazy.
I was like, "Oh my god!"
Oh yeah, it's enormous.
Yeah, yep. It was the biggest winery in the Southern Hemisphere at one stage, and made a lot of fortifieds, obviously, which went back to the UK, to the motherland. But when you get to the gate of All Saints, this beautiful elm tree avenue at the down the front driveway. So you drive down the avenue of elms and get to the winery, which is built by the two Scotsmen, as I mentioned. They came out to Australia after working in one of the Queen's castles in northern Scotland, and they were working sort of the gold rush in Rutherglen. And when the gold dried up, they wanted to build a winery that resembled where they used to work together in Scotland. So they... planted vines, made the first wine about 1864 and then started building this crazy castle building in the middle of nowhere in Australia between 1870 and 1880 and handmade all the bricks on site.
Oh, my gosh.
It took them 10 years to build it from front to back.
And can I just say, for everyone, go online and Google it. Like, we're not talking a small faux castle. We are talking it's a big structure.
It's enormous.
Yeah.
It
actually looks like the bricks look quite recent. Like I said, it was sort of that classic red brick.
Yeah.
But they handmade the bricks.
Handmade the bricks between 1870 and 1880.
They were driven.
Yeah, they were crazy. No one would ever do it these days. Yeah, Scotsman.
Oh, God.
But the wineries around Rutherglen are basically tin sheds. Ours just has a brick facade around it to make it look like a Scottish castle, I guess. And those tin shed structures make Rutherglen wines, traditionally fortifieds, into what they are today.
Okay, so quick, can you give us a quick rundown on Rutherglen as a region? Because we haven't covered it much on this podcast yet.
So Rutherglen as a region is 3 hours door-to-door from Melbourne, beautiful country town. It has that typical sort of gold rush feel to it with lots of old buildings, well-preserved old pubs. Mm-hmm. And fun fact on Rutherglen is every winery is now family-owned, which is pretty cool. And I reckon, going out on a limb here, but I can't think of any other regions around Australia that would be all family owned.
It wouldn't be.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, which is fun.
That's incredible.
So families like the Campbells and Colleen's.
Pfeiffer's. Jen Pfeiffer. Hello.
Pfeiffer's. De Bortley are in town now.
Nice.
So, yeah, the great group of people, and we usually get along. And my uncle taught me a term years ago called co-opetition. So although we're all in competition, we all help one another, which is cool.
Yeah, I love that. That's really cool.
The thing I love about Rutherglen, it's got those really wide streets. I went to the Rutherglen Wine Show many years ago, and I stayed at a pub, and at the back of the pub there was a building. I think it was where they took the dead bodies.
Yeah, that'd be the Vic.
So he knows it. There you go. Like, it's a little brick.
The town mortuary, yeah.
There. So you go at the pub, I don't know if you can stay there, but it's got the wide balcony. You can stay upstairs, sit on the balcony drinking jugs of beer, which, like, I haven't done for years. And we went tiki tour walking around, and you walk out the back door of the sort of kitchen or the pub, and there's this building, which is like an outdoor toilet almost. It's tiny, and it says it's the mortuary.
Oh my God.
We don't use it much anymore. It's called the Victoria Hotel, which is recently purchased by a lovely couple from Melbourne, and they're renovating it. But I haven't asked what they're doing with the.
Stay there so you can see it. It's really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
We're thinking of doing like a winery trip of people. Everyone who has a dog is going to bring their dog. And what are we going to call it? A K wine trip. So maybe we'll make it to – maybe we'll go to Rutherglen.
Is it like K-pop?
No, like K9, but K-wine.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. It's really funny and witty.
I'm just saying because BTS have broken up, you know.
Oh, my God, what?
All over K-pop. Anyway,
we've been looking at this wine for too long. Take us through it. Where are we going to start? Yeah, the microphone is yours, Nick.
So I heard you're both Marsan fans.
No, one she was like everything else at Rutherglen, all the beautiful fortifieds and the reds and everything, and we got Marsan because you wrote the brief.
Yeah, well.
So I thought I'd bring along a one straight out of tank, a 2021 family cellar Marsan, which I'm bottling in a couple of weeks. And then some back vintage Marsans, 2012, 2010 and 2007. Two older sisters and I worked together, and we recently decided to unlock the family cellar and offer some of the back vintages that we have down there to customers.
So hang on.
Yeah, this is interesting.
You grew up in Milawa. You're part of the All Saints family, went off and did your thing. You've come back.
Yep.
And your sister's working there, obviously, but everyone who works there, like your cell hands and your assistant winemakers, are they all family? Or?
No. Right. There's a few of the crew that have been there for 20-odd years, but no, it's just my two older sisters and I.
So does that mean you're descended from the Mad Scotsman that built the building?
No. A different Scottish family, Mad family.
But what's interesting to me is that how come there wasn't like a museum or program before? Like,
A lot of the stuff was – there was a big sort of sale before our family bought the place in the early 90s. So a lot of the back vintage wines have gone. We've been collecting as we've gone along, and past customers have sent us some old bottles when they've moved house or something. We send them younger, fresh bottles. But most of the wine we have in the family cellar is from our ownership period, so from the early 90s to now.
Did you, when you bought it, get the old fortifieds in barrel though?
Say that again, sorry.
Did you get the old – was it old fortified wine, like the stock in barrel that you bought?
So when Dad bought the property in the early 90s, he was really after the fortified stock, and there was hundreds of thousands of litres of it.
Because Jen Pfeiffer is – I know Jen, she's a mate of mine, and she said to me once that – winemakers in Rutherglen are custodians of Australian winemaking history. That's kind of your...
That's really beautiful.
Because of our fortified history. Because that was what we were built on. And to buy into that and then have that pressure of looking after it. I mean, did you have fortified winemaking experience before you...
No.
No, because you go to Roseworthy and they kind of talk about it, but...
Yeah, it gets brushed over pretty quickly, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a learn on the job style as well, with the blending and everything. You have to physically be in the winery for quite a long period to understand how the different batches work together in the vines and everything.
And how putting a baby wine in is going to...
morph into an aged
one. Exactly. That's the thing that I would have no experience with, like being able to judge this is worthy of going into barrel for grand or different classifications. You know, where's it going to end up?
And it takes time and experience, basically. So that's why it's a generational. Rutherglen is such a strong generational region because the knowledge gets passed down from generation
custodians.
To, yeah,
it is pretty cool. So let's try these ones.
Yeah, stop pulling the man away from my mouth.
It's too much to talk about.
So it's 2021 Family Cellar Marsan from tank being bottled in a couple of weeks.
The thing that I find amazing about this is there's a waxy white flower character that I get like lots of white florals in Marsan, but this is a waxiness. Is that a change in winemaking with more skins, or is that just what baby Marsan, like baby shock? Sometimes I break into song. But is that what baby Marsan looks like?
Generally, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So all these wines, they come off that older block of vineyard. Planted in 1959, and they go into barrel for between 9 and 15 months, generally, depending on the vintage.
Old barrel?
About 20% new, large format, so 500 litre French.
But you can't see it at all.
Yeah, so that's the aim, to get some texture and integrate the yolk into it.
The mouthfeel is incredible. Like, it is so beautiful. It's like... oily, but it kind of melts. It is just such a beautiful mouthfeel.
I have never had a Marsan that hasn't been in bottle before. I mean, I've tried...
No, me either.
...every other grape variety under the sun, but Marsan...
Yeah.
And I worked in the Rhone.
Yeah, that's disgraceful, Meg.
I was only making rosé and red, so...
Oh, my God.
Didn't bother trying the Marsans.
So will you be releasing this...
Yes.
This young, like...
It'll be released in... What are we now? It'll be bottled in about 2 weeks and then it'll be released a month after that, so 6 weeks' time.
And how is the market for Marsan? Like, is it... Are people getting interested? Is it changing? Are you seeing better sales?
Has it grown since we started this podcast?
Like, you're responsible for the resurgence of Marsan in the world, okay?
It's... I'm hesitant to say niche, but it certainly has a loyal following, but we need to get better at putting into the hands of SOMs, sommeliers and other wine buyers and customers that come to Cellador and show them what a treat it is.
I think it's kind of a little bit analogous to Hunter Sem. We all know that it's amazing. But the customer, the average Joe doesn't buy it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And this is the thing. And, you know, one of the things that has come up recently with COVID and everything is drink local, drink, you know, what's around you. The diversity. I just watched this amazing seminar that they did in the UK about the diversity of Australia, and Marsan came up. And Victorian put their hands up and basically said, we've got everything. Like, you don't even actually have to step outside Victoria. Maybe we don't have Hunter Semillon, but we've got everything else. Mm. We've got fortifies, we've got sparkling. Why would you go anywhere else? And why aren't we using Marsan as our heritage material?
Totally.
Because aren't we the biggest growers of Marsan in the
world?
In
the world, I'd say, Victoria, yeah. Yep, between Tabilk, Mitchelton, us and a couple of other wineries.
And your plants are from the 1950s.
1959. So I caught up with Alistair Purbrick from... Tabilk a couple of years ago, and was having a chat to him, knowing that he remembers more than most people in the industry. And he told me that, yeah, All Saints got cuttings from Tabilk in about 1959, and before Tabilk, the cuttings came from Yeringberg, I believe, in the Yarra Valley.
Yeah, because it was part of the original plantings, apparently, which I'd actually heard hadn't survived.
So
from the 1850s plantings, Marsan was apparently one of the originals.
Yep.
But, I mean, who knows what the history is. But in terms of, we talk about old vine, right? And you're saying they're 1950s. Are they all alive, or do you do a replanting?
No, that block is a separate block. I planted a block next door to that in 2017, I think it was. So all the original plantings are still within one block. There's plenty of fallen soldiers through there.
Yeah.
And interestingly, 23 vines of Gewurztraminer for some reason just came.
Oh, I love that. I love that about these old plantings. There's always some random shit planted in there.
Does that mean that you have or haven't had phloxera?
We have, yeah. It went through
but rubber. But just some survived.
We went through Rutherglen in 19-teens.
Yeah.
These were planted in 1959. So these were planted post phylloxera.
Are they on rootstock?
Yes.
Okay, yep. Cool. Oh, good. So we won't lose them. We're okay.
So that's our heritage material on rootstock?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Because
We have a big thing here in the Yarra. I don't know if you're doing it. Where, because phylloxera, we thought we were immune here in the Yarra because, you know, better than everyone else. all the, like the Yeringberg stuff and these, and Yarra Yering, we're getting it all put onto rootstock because it's our heritage. Yeah. But you've already.
Yeah, way ahead.
Yeah.
Wow.
Shout out to Yarra Valley people. It's here. All right.
Okay, that was sensational. When it gets released, how much do you sell that for?
That is my, what is it, 45.
Nice. Mm. Yeah, totally. Yeah, worth buying people. That's delicious.
I've always thought that young Marsan in bottle was a bit meh.
Mm.
But correct me if I'm wrong, this is much more textural than a normal young Marsan.
Yeah, and that's my aim, giving it some oak complexity and also lees stirring. So it's stirring up those lees in barrel for a few months to give it texture.
Well, that's like, it's nothing like the Tabilk Marsan. The Tabilk Marsan, when it's really young, is it's very simple and doesn't have much body, but that is like body central. That is
that's next level.
Awesome.
And my take-home message is buy Rutherglen. Well, but that All Saints, it's just beautiful.
Mm, thank you.
Because we had that, is it Passing Winds? I know that's a terrible name.
Yes, that's from Heathkit.
Is that what it's called?
No, it wasn't called Passing. It was something about winds. I don't think it was Passing Winds.
Passing Clouds?
No, it's something, Changing Winds.
That's it. It wasn't Passing Winds. I got to tag them in this episode to make sure they hear that.
A skinsy Marsan, which I actually quite like. But I think for me, that is more of the perfect balance between that entry-level $10.99 Tabilk Marsan and some texture. It's a Chardonnay-esque Marsan.
It has some personality.
Yeah.
A texture, because we were saying earlier in our last podcast, structure is way more important than flavour.
In
terms of quality, and I think that just has...
Oh
yeah, pretty kick-ass structure.
I can't wait. Let's get going. What's next?
The next one in front of you is 2012 Family Cellar Chardonnay. So obviously 10 years old.
Woofed. We've jumped into the old category really quickly.
So
the next three, are they all available as part of your museum release?
Yeah, that's right. Which people can register for on the website and released in July.
So can you buy like 4, 4, and 4 of them?
Sure.
So you can buy a mixed dozen, and that's what my recommendation is, because these wines can go
miles.
You know, 30, 40, probably 50. What's the oldest Marsan you've had?
76, I think it was. Yeah.
So what's that, 50?
Yeah.
Nearly 50 years old.
That was probably 6 or 8 years ago, but it was past its prime, but certainly drinkable.
And under cork too, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
So now, because it's all under screw cap, it's going to, you've got better.
Legs.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
This can be your children's inheritance.
Mm.
That's what you should do to give your children.
That's cute.
Don't give them money. Give them my son.
I'm not trying to have any money to give them anyway.
I
work in the wine industry, remember? Okay, this smells divine, this 2012.
So can you just describe to us what... when you're watching these wines mature, what are you expecting to see at certain age points? Because, you know, we talk about that kerosene in Riesling now coming on too early being a bit of a fault.
Yeah.
What are your signposts that it's aging
properly?
Properly at each of these years, yeah.
When it's young, like the first one we just tasted, it's going to be aromatic, stone fruit, pear, peach, and then it goes into sort of orange blossom after a few years. And then beyond that, it becomes really marmalade and honeyed. It almost is almost perceived to be sweet, but it's just really rich, textural, honeyed and marmalade as it gets older. And it keeps changing the glass. As long as you keep sipping it, it'll keep developing and changing and opening up.
And in your family cellar, where I think I might want to go and die, do you have every vintage?
We have
Marsan?
Almost, yeah. There's a few years there that we skipped, mainly because of weather and or because my sister drank it all.
Go, sis. Your name's not Mel, is it?
That checks out.
But it's most years, yeah.
I know you're going to yell at me for making this podcast go too long, but... since you've bought it in the 1990s, is there any year that you haven't made or you don't think is worthy of keeping?
That's a good question.
Or buying.
Yeah, or buying. Or,
2020, we didn't make because of the Richard bushfires. Mm.
Just Marsan or everything?
Almost everything, yeah. Went down the drain.
So how does a business survive that?
Well, being a agricultural business, family owned, and a bit, you just got to think long term. So most of that wine I made and then put it down the drain, unfortunately, because smoke develops over time. I didn't put any of that wine in barrels, fortunately, because it can tank barrels. So it was all held in tank, put it down the gurgler. So how do we survive that? You'd look forward to next year, take the hit, and hopefully the next few years are going to be better. But that's agriculture and dealing with the extreme weather that we have.
Wow.
And I do think that people forget that it is an agricultural pursuit. It is different from growing wheat because it's a perennial crop. It stays in the ground forever and ever and ever. But one thing can knock you out for a year. And how many other people in business would say, oh, well, just a bad year, we'll just take it on the chin and we'll move on? I mean, seriously.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, it's insane. It's mind-boggling. If like that happened Starbucks, to the dairy industry, but even other agriculture like dairy, if there was a bad year for some reason, like it would be like an actual crisis. Like I know wine is not comparable to like.
I think it is.
Yeah, well, maybe it is. But it is pretty crazy.
It is, yeah. And I guess that's why it's a long-term play, long-term gain.
But okay, you go. Oh,
well,
I was just going to bring it back to the wine. We've been tasting this wine and we haven't actually spoken about it yet.
Can I just say, All Saints has been around for years. New export, obviously, because we have quite a few people international.
Yeah.
What markets are you in if people want to?
Oh, you're appealing to our international listeners, Meg.
Singapore.
I don't think it's in either, darling people in either.
Oh, sorry, either. But we do have listeners in Singapore.
So this weird group of people in South – not weird.
No, she listens, Meg.
We have this group of people in either South Carolina.
Wow.
Like more listeners there than Canberra.
Huh.
So
yeah, cool.
So Singapore.
Yep.
Yeah.
Tennessee.
Oh, not far from South Carolina.
Yeah.
Random.
Go cool. And buy.
Yep, my sister and I are going over there in October.
Oh, wow. Tennessee. And my thing with the states is hit the small states where they don't get a lot of love and they will fall in love with you.
Yeah, good idea. All right, we'll put that on the itinerary. Tennessee, Singapore, Hong Kong. Where else? There was some in China that stopped.
Oh, wow.
Thanks, China. I think that's about South Korea a little bit. Just
not
went over
in
there.
The UK.
Not yet. We were, but no.
Wow. Okay.
Yep, it's on the list of things to do.
I know.
Okay, can we talk about this winding up? Because I've gobbled it down. I'm literally empty. Okay, I'm going to start because
10 years old,
for
baby.
Me, I drink a lot of Tabuk Marsan. And what I really loved about this that's like kind of slightly interesting and different is it's got this like epic saline almost character to the acid, which I really, really love. It adds something really complex and interesting.
Yeah, it's certainly – you're on the money. It's sort of like when you open a scallop, freshly opened scallop, the juice,
it is,
the juice
yeah.
in the shell.
Mel wouldn't know. She doesn't like seafood. But
no, but I get it. Yeah.
Briny, sea salt.
It is briny.
It's yeah,
the end of the pier
kind of
thing. Eating cheese.
Yeah. She says she scoffs cheese into her mouth.
So it's not here. Far from dog.
So where's that come from?
The fruit.
Wow.
Yeah, amazingly. Obviously, it's not from oak. It's just from the grapes themselves. And it's the acidity holds up so well in Marsan, which hence why it grows well in warmer climates, because there's still plenty of acidity retained in the grapes when you harvest them, which are carried into the wine and through fermentation. So it's acidity.
Wow.
So I'm just noticing this is from your very first vintage. Is that right? 2007 right through to 2022?
Yeah, just 7 years down the track,
good,
yeah.
Good catch.
Yep.
No, that's nice. As a winemaker.
Yeah.
What a history
yeah.
to
yeah.
have.
Yeah, it's fun to look back on it.
Because I look back at most of the wine I've made, it'd be, oh, crap. But these are just, yeah. I do forget how good Marsan is.
Oh, God, it's unreal.
But if I'm in Rutherglen, I would be drinking reds. I wouldn't really be going whites.
No,
well,
look at this.
We get warm summers.
You do have warm summers,
yeah.
And I love fortified and...
I do love red wine, but, I mean, this is just so... to the bottle we've just tasted, the 2012, what's that worth in your museum program?
$110.
Ugh, easy. So. I'd completely worth that.
Oh,
it's
God, yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's 10 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it would go, I mean, that seriously looks, if you did that blind, I reckon people would say, oh, maybe 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah.
It's so fresh. Was that a particularly great vintage or
2012? It was a fairly mild vintage, so nor hot or wet. It wasn't hot like, well, warm like 13 or wet like 11. It was fairly mild, so hence why the acidity is held up.
You got to love winemakers. No notes there. Just Nick's closing his eyes, going, "Oh, I'm thinking back to the vintage."
And the first one that we had, the current vintage,
yeah.
Is that likely to age similarly?
It is, yeah. 2021, again, was a very mild year. So in Rutherglen, where it's not unusual to get sort of weeks of 35 plus, but in a year like 2021 and also 2012, we didn't have that. So it retained that beautiful acidity, which helps wines develop and age for a long time.
Yeah.
I can remember vintages, but I can't remember my children's birth dates.
Yeah.
Yeah. My husband's the same.
Right.
So
he can barely remember my name, but he can tell you every vintage condition in the Yarra Valley.
So, listeners, if you can't afford the $110 one, all you need to do is buy the current vintage and drink it in 10 years.
Yeah. Or 20. I wouldn't drink that in 10 years. But this is the thing about these wines. They are cheap when they're released, and on you. And if you expect the seller to do it, then pay the premium.
Then you get the premium, exactly.
But what's the next one's?
2010.
Much more developed colour, considering there's only 2 years between the two.
Yeah, you're right.
Why is that?
It's had the same cellaring conditions. I would hazard a guess to say that it was in oak for longer.
Mm. And I'm talking generically here. 2010 was kind of the last year of a 10-year drought. Do you think
more concentrated?
That could maybe have something to do with it?
It certainly could, yeah. So it was lower yield because of that drought. I think a combination of the oak contact and the lower yielding year.
Oh, sorry. I get told off for slurping in the microphone.
Yes. I tell her off.
Oak regime, you've made all of these. That does feel like it's got a bit more oak, or is that the wine developing?
It's both.
Okay.
Yeah, so this wine had about 15 months in it in large French oak, 500 litre puncheons.
Right.
But also development as well.
And is that, do you make that oak decision based on the year or you bought a lot of oak that year, you had some money from New Oak or
combination of things. So, yeah, if you have a plush year, then you might get a few extra barrels and have a bit of a play around. Might also have might also have a play around with a different type of cooper. So various things. And also if one wine is – if the prior vintage hasn't quite sold out, might hold it in oak for a bit longer.
So French oak?
Yep.
500s?
Yes.
Cooper? Burgundians or Bordeaux? Or do you use Rhone? Or too specific?
No. You're getting too nerdy. Take a step back. When you say 500, just give us an approximate, like, what does it look like for a normal person who doesn't know what that means? Like, how big is it?
It's about up to sort of, I don't know, waist height?
Waist to chest height.
Of a normal... Chick?
Yeah, it's a fairly...
They're hard to move. I can't roll them.
But it's bigger than a normal barrel.
Yeah.
So
twice the size.
Yeah, okay. A normal barrel is called a barrique and that's 225 litres.
Yeah.
Puncheon is 500 litres. Okay. And they're often in beer gardens, in restaurants and pubs. And it's
That's a good way to...
Easy to rest your glass on.
Yeah.
Perfect. Oh, okay. And the theory is that the bigger the oak, the bigger the barrel, the less... oak impact it has on the wine.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
But, okay, can I be nerdy? Is it French coopers or?
French, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, yep. Always French.
You can be nerdy as long as you explain it. Now you have to explain what that means. Like, what does that even mean?
Are the barrels made from French oak?
Yes, they are.
But are they made, what do you mean by French? Does that mean that the barrel was made by a French Frenchman from
French person?
Yeah, okay. Are barrels made?
Coopers are the people that make barrels.
I know, but like, are there coopers in Australia? Like, can you get the oak in and an Australian cooper make it, or is that not done?
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a company called AP John, who's probably Australia's main cooper based in South Australia. Shahinger. Yep. Okay. So they bring timber in from France and America and actually cut the timber up and to make barrels.
Now you've got to explain. Now you've said it.
We'll do that again. Let's move on to you. 20.
All right. Yeah. What's our last one?
No, second last.
Second last. The 2010 that we're on.
2010. So, yeah, for only 2 years of age, there is a progressive leap in colour and development wine.
Yep. This is bigger and richer, and this is more of sort of.
This is more your classic. This is a Mel. Mel would love this. Because it does taste toasty, but there's still that honeysuckle and honey, and I'm assuming you don't get any botrytis up there in...
No, it's pretty rare, very rare. So this is more sort of creamed honey territory for me.
And can I just say, honey and creamed honey are two different flavours, aren't they?
True, yeah.
And just jumping in to remind everyone, the botrytis is that little bit of rot that can come on the vines. It's famous for the more sweet wines, but we're not
in more humid climates.
Yeah, so we're not getting in around the glen.
That is beautiful. But I've got to say, the 12 for me.
12, hands down. The 12 is my favourite.
Yeah,
your pick. The 10s, I think maybe too forward for such a young wine.
Yeah, sure.
The 12 is... Considering it's only 2 years younger, it's so tightly wound.
It is, yeah.
And held together.
And I'll have a long time to go too.
These two later ones, if you had have shown me them both, would have like blown my socks off. They're incredible. Oh. But something about that 12, it's got a character that just like really appeals to me. I love it.
Yeah, it's quite sort of Moorish but seductive in its own way.
Seductive. I love that as a term. Great tasting name. These are lovely. Aren't you excited that we have so much Malzahn?
All right, and finishing us up there, we made the decision to make this a two-part episode because there was just so much to discuss, we couldn't fit it all into one. We'll be coming back to you next week with a really cool Malzahn, a more skinzy hipster one. You know that's right up my alley. And Neg geeks out even more than you would believe possible because Nick brings in for us a 100-year-old wine to taste. Something really special, so make sure you tune in and until then, enjoy your next glass of wine.
We would like to thank Rob Dolan Wines for sponsoring this podcast, and they have kindly made available an offer for our listeners.
that's it. So Rob Dolan Wines is based only about 30 minutes from Melbourne. So if you're in Victoria, it's pretty easy to get out to Wyandotte South. If you tell the tasting staff at the cellar door that you listen to the podcast, what they're going to do is give you a sneaky taste of all the other things that aren't on the standard tasting menu that you might have heard about while you're listening.
And hopefully it's all Cabernet.
Oh, go the Cabernet.
Go the Cabernet. Drink the Cabernet.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. Drink the Marsan.
No.
If you aren't based quite as close, we still have something for you. There is a free shipping code. It is just podcast. If you put podcast into your checkout, then you'll get free shipping. So you can taste some of the things that we rave about on this podcast.
Go the Cabernet.